This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Saukel, the constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. You probably heard that this past Monday, a veteran asked Donald Trump about problems with the treatment that veterans are currently getting for PTSD, something that he suffered from and overcame after 8 combat tours in Afghanistan. Now, in the days following that meeting, the media has been twisting the response that Donald Trump gave to that soldier. The media suggested that Trump was attacking veterans with PTSD, suggesting that they were weak. Today, we're going to the source. Retired Staff Sergeant Chad Robichaud joined Tony to talk about what really happened.
Chad, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tony.
First, let's talk a little bit before we get into how the progressive media likes to twist things and make stuff up where it's not there. Let's talk a little bit about the Mighty Oaks Warrior Program and what you have seen happen as a result of a holistic approach to those individuals who are suffering from PTSD.
Mighty Oaks is a faith-based program. We go beyond the trauma and individual event that took place or the series of events that may have taken place in a combat veteran's past, and we look at who they are as individuals, the choices they make every day, and the responses they make towards the trauma they experienced. And we help align them, their lives, to the lives that we believe they were created to live. And we've become an alternative resource to clinical programs. So a very holistic, faith-based program. And we've had a tremendous success. We've had 1,100 graduates, very high-risk suicide individuals coming through the program with a 22-a-day rate. And we've had 0 suicides in our graduates. And beyond that, we've just seen so many of our graduates move on to do amazing things, either continuing to serve or transition out of the military and just get back to living a great life again.
Now, Sergeant Robichaud, you talked about that in your question about the faith-based approach, a holistic approach that's being kind of squeezed out and looked down upon, marginalized in many ways. Let's talk a little bit about your journey through that and your recovery and overcoming PTSD. What role did faith play in your experience?
It was everything. I mean, when nothing else worked, when I simply made the decision to surrender my life to Christ and to live the life that I should have been living all along, that's when my anxiety went away. That's when my PTSD went away. That's when the desire to take my life, because I struggled with taking my life. That's when all those things went away. And I had tried the medications. I tried going to counseling. Those things didn't work for me, and I went through about a 3-year period of a real self-destructive downward spiral, depression, anxiety, panic attacks, and I almost lost my family. My wife and I almost divorced, and so hitting rock bottom and coming to a point to where I knew where else to go. My wife and really challenged me, asking me how I could do all the things I did in the military. And when it came to my family, I'd quit, and that challenge sparked a fire inside of me to fight again, get back in the fight. And I knew I couldn't do it alone, and I needed someone to walk alongside me. And a man named Steve Tillip came along to mentor me, and he introduced me to not just an authentic relationship with Christ, but he introduced me to a year-long biblical mentorship of manhood, biblical manhood. And when I got on the other side of that, I realized that I found a cure. And it's like finding a cure to cancer. You'd have to share it. And that's how Mighty Oaks started. It was just a desire and passion in me to feel like I had to pay it forward. I had to pass that cure on to the next guy. And here we are 5 years later, and we have 1,100 graduates. And also on the spiritual resiliency piece, I've spoken to probably 20,000 active duty military on spiritual resiliency.
You're based in California. In this faith-based approach, as you described, a holistic, and as you presented this to Mr. Trump, what are you finding in terms of your interaction with the military, the VA and others? Is this type of approach to dealing with PTSD, is this being frowned upon? Is it being shoved aside, or is it being embraced? What's your experience?
We get a kind of a mix, to be honest. We've had people push back on us because we're a faith-based. We, we've held fast to. I mean, obviously, there's no reason for us to do what we're going to do unless we do it the way we believe. But what we found is through the success of the program, it's really caught fire. We get active duty on PPAD, which is called a temporary assignment of duty orders. So the military doesn't pay us, but they pay the veteran to come, and he didn't have to take leave, or not the veteran, active duty. So we get active duty from probably about 16 different commands that send them to us. And then in addition, we have veterans who are out that come to our programs. And the response we tend to get is tons of guys that went to all kind of clinical programs, and those clinical programs didn't work for them. And when they come to our program, which is only 6 days long, by the way, and that's probably been their biggest critique, is how can you change someone's life in 6 days when they've been a six-month inpatient program and that didn't work? And the point is, and you know this, is it's not 6 days or it's not 6 months. It's one moment when a man or woman makes a decision to get up and move forward and live the life we're created to live. And that's the approach we take, and that's where we have found success with taking warriors who have faced the things that Mr. Trump talked about today, faced hard things that we're not supposed to see, things that we're not meant to see. And when we fall down on our face, to have someone challenge us, like my wife challenged me, and say, hey, it's there's a path forward. And that path forward comes with making a decision to get up off the ground and get back in the fight and live the lives we were created to live and do something important again. Because I believe that for all of our veterans, that regardless of how what we experienced and what we've seen, when we fall down, there comes a time that we also need to get back up and be the warriors and leaders that this country needs us to be. And 23 million veterans in America, it would be a national travesty if they all became victims to this PTSD thing and stayed laying down on the ground. We need our warriors to get back up and get back and lead again after the military, after the uniform.
And the numbers are staggering with 22 veterans a day taking their lives. Quite significant. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Sergeant Chad Robichaux, my guest. He is heads up the Mighty Oaks Warrior Program. To find out more about that, you go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. All right, Chad, I want to ask you, what did you ask Donald Trump?
Well, what I asked Mr. Trump was if he was president. And this was the nature of the question. If he was president, would he allow and fund holistic programs, not just strictly clinical programs, because that's what we have now. We have strictly clinical programs, but allow and fund holistic programs that maybe even faith-based programs like ours, and for warriors to have that option to get that treatment. And I also asked about him restoring the historical role of our chaplains, which has been taken away from many of our chaplains, in that spiritual resiliency would actually become a priority in the military again. So those are the nature of my questions. I wasn't asking him about individual veterans and were veterans strong or were veterans weak. What I was pointing out was that the thing that's weak is the system that we have in place. That's what's weak, and that's what's broken, and that's what's failed. And the question wasn't related to the veteran at all. My question was related to the solution to the problem. And I felt he gave an answer that that affirmed my concern that the system's broken, and we need a better system. We need more options. I'm not speaking against clinical programs. I'm saying we need alternatives and caveats. And one of the things I liked that he said was that he wanted to put the decision back in the hands of the veteran. And right. I was really happy to hear him say that.
Chad, I want to play just a portion of his response, because I take it that you were not offended by his response.
No, not at all.
All right. I want to play his response, because I was sitting there right next to him when he made this statement in response to your question. And it's amazing, because I was shocked when I came out of the event and saw how the media was portraying this, that he attacked veterans. So here's a short clip of what he had to say in response to your question.
When you talk about the mental health problems, when people come back from war and combat and they see things that maybe a lot of the folks in this room have seen many times over, and you're strong and you can handle it, but a lot of people can't handle it. And they see horror stories, they see events that you couldn't see in a movie, nobody would believe it. Now, we need a mental health help and medical, and it's one of the things that I think is least addressed, and it's one of the things that I hear, like your question, it's one of the things that I hear the most about when I go around and talk to the veterans. So we're going to have a very, very robust level of performance having to do with mental health. We are losing so many great people that can be taken care of if they have proper care. You know, when you hear the 22 suicides a day, it's a big part of your question, but when you hear the 22 suicides a day, that should never be.
And when I mean, let me just ask you, did you take that as if he were attacking veterans who have PTSD?
No, no. And you and I, you know, talked about this. I didn't come here. I came here to be able to ask a very important question. And that question was, what are we going to do to change the broken system that we have? And I felt he responded to it. The one thing I think they're twisting that he said was that sometimes some people see things that they shouldn't see, and they can't handle it. And the sad reality of that is, that's true. For anybody to twist that and suggest it's weak is a complete slap in the face and insult to veterans, because, you know, I've seen and experienced things. Many veterans have seen and experienced things that have knocked us down. Just like you get a broken bone or a bullet through your flesh. I mean, sometimes we get hurt, and sometimes those hurts are mental. Sometimes those hurts are physical. Sometimes they're spiritual. But to suggest that because the acknowledgement that wasn't strong enough to handle it at some point doesn't equate to being weak. And he didn't say that. I didn't interpret it that way.
And even as I introduced you to ask the question, I made reference to the fact that you had suffered from and overcame PTSD, so to suggest that he was attacking anybody, it's just amazing to me. But that's how the media operates. They twist, they turn, they misrepresent, and that was on full display in this particular case. Sergeant Chad Robichaux, thank you so much for joining us. An amazing story, amazing ministry, and we hope to have you back on to talk more about that. And we're certainly going to encourage people to check out Mighty Oaks Warriors program. So, Chad, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on.
You can find out more about Chad as well as the Mighty Oaks Warrior programs when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, we'll be joined by our own Kathy Roos. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Ever wonder why your pastor always avoids talking about specific candidates who are running for public office from the pulpit? It's because of a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 that prohibits churches and other nonprofit organizations from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. For more information on how the Johnson Amendment chills free speech and how it should be amended, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. A rather unbelievable article in the Christian Post claims that the pro-life movement does better under Democratic leadership. Eric Sapp is the author of the article entitled, Hillary Clinton is the Best Choice for Voters Against Abortion. Sapp is an American political consultant based in Washington, D.C., who also serves as executive director of the nonprofit American Values Network. Kathy Roos, FRC's senior legal fellow, joined Tony to talk about the article.
Kathy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be with you.
Now, you know, this is actually quite amazing. This piece by Eric that suggests that if you really care about the life issue and you want to see abortions reduced, you need to vote Democrat because they are the ones that actually reduce the number of abortions. And I'm going to go to there's several points in here that are just outrageous, but for the sake of time, they say that during Republican administrations, abortions go up. And they say the reason for that is because Republicans are, well, let me read it from it. It's no coincidence that abortions go up when Republicans are in charge and down when Democrats are. The two biggest indicators a woman will have an abortion are that she is poor and had an unintended pregnancy. So that's the reason, because Republicans don't give money away and they don't promote these comprehensive sex ed programs.
Well, Tony, when I first saw this, I thought, don't we see this argument every 4 years? And I actually went and did a little research, and we do see the argument every presidential election. We hear from a Democrat this argument. And it was interesting because when I looked it up, it's the same guy that writes this article every presidential election. Eric Sapp, he changes the title. He tinkers a little bit with some of the words, but he's basically reprinting his own piece every election season. So here's the big point. This guy is wrong on the numbers. He is peddling a myth that has been around for 25 years now, that abortion numbers are higher under Republican presidents and lower under a Democrat president, so everybody should go vote Democrat. The truth is, the numbers have been looked at. It's not that hard to calculate. You can look at the total number of abortions under each party's administration and then divide that number by the number of years the party held office, and that gives you the total number of abortions and the abortion rate under each party. Well, the truth is that Republican presidents average lower abortion numbers and a lower abortion rate than Democrat presidents. So this guy is just off on the numbers. That's not stopping him from making this argument every year and stirring up this hornet's nest and then giving, you know, an excuse for Democrats to try to win over pro-lifers and Christians. I mean, there are people that have studied this argument when he's made it in the past and have looked at the numbers. And it's really shocking that when a Democrat sits in the White House, there are actually 70,000 more babies who die by abortion than when a Republican sits in the White House. So where does this myth come from? Well, the myth comes from the 1990s, Tony, when there were indeed fewer abortions under Bill Clinton's presidency than there had been under George W. Bush's presidency. But why? Why were there fewer at that time 25 years ago? Well, it doesn't have anything to do with who was in the White House. It has something to do with who was on the court and what they did. And in 1992, the court issued Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which upheld the right of states to pass abortion-limiting restrictions in their state. It didn't uphold everything that Pennsylvania wanted to do in terms of limiting abortion, but it upheld quite a lot of them. So that case came down in 92, and then Bill Clinton took office in 93. And so Dr. Michael New, our good friend, who has addressed this very issue probably every abortion every presidential election, says that what the research shows is that restrictions like those allowed by the Casey decision do, in fact, reduce abortion. And so that's why there were fewer abortions under Clinton than there had been under George H.W. Bush. So not about the man in the White House, in this case, 25 years ago. It was about what the court was able to do. And then the court gave power to the state to pass some common sense limitations on abortion. So his numbers are wrong.
Right.
And if I just can make another point, I mean, anybody with their head screwed on straight knows that what Hillary will do if she becomes president on this issue. I mean, she's not been shy. I mean, she's going to force taxpayers to fund elective abortion.
Well, that's what the party platform calls for. It calls for the elimination of the Hyde Amendment, which prohibits taxpayer funding of elective abortions. And, Kathy, you've been around long enough. You know that what the government pays for, we get more of.
Totally. Right. Right. That is a true. Right. That's a truism. You know, and she's also going to push the FOCA, the Freedom of Choice Act. She was one of the original co-sponsors in the Senate. You know, she and her party make no bones about it, and what FOCA would do would be wipe out all state restrictions on abortions, like parental notice laws, mm-hmm. like restricting partial birth abortions, like restrictions barring non-physicians from doing abortions. If you wipe out all these, the state laws are why we see, I mean, really why we see a reduction in abortion.
Right, going back
also
to what...
Going back to what you said
in 92, when the Planned Parenthood versus Casey...
Exactly.
That's what allowed the states to begin regulating abortion
exactly.
and dialing it back. Kathy,
right.
out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Very insightful. A great look at the numbers, as always. Thanks for being on.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tony.
To find out more about Kathy and the work of FRC's legal team, go to TonyPerkins.com. Coming up next, why would the Justice Department drop charges against a weapons dealer? We'll be back with more Washington Watch right after this.
This November, faith, family, and freedom are on the ballot. After 8 years of President Obama, this election will mark the beginning of a new chapter in America. That's why FRC Action is mounting the National Values Voter Bus Tour. Our bus tour is traveling the country to mobilize values voters in battleground states and key races across the nation. Join us in the effort for your values, your vote, your future. Visit valuesbustour.org for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. The Department of Justice has dropped its case against an arms dealer who threatened to out Hillary Clinton, exposing her efforts to arm Islamic extremists. Under the deal between the DOJ and an arms dealer named Turi, Turi admits no guilt in the transactions that he participated in, but he agreed to refrain from U.S.-regulated arms dealing for 4 years. A $200,000 civil penalty will be waived if Turi abides by the agreement. The trial was initially set to begin on Election Day. To talk about this case, Tony is joined by Texas Congressman Louis Gohmert.
Congressman Louis Gohmert of Texas, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Sorry to be slow getting on. But this is very consistent with what we had been hearing, we know that Obama wanted to help the Libyans overthrow Gaddafi. He came on television and told us. And, I'd had some of the leaders in Israel tell me when I was over there, we don't understand why you want to take out Gaddafi. He was, since 2003, he had blood on his hands before 2003, but since 2003, he's been more help to you in getting terrorists than anybody but us in Israel. And but that was what Obama wanted to do. And we knew that there were some elements of al-Qaeda in the rebels, and some of us on the House floor and other places were begging, please don't take out Gaddafi till we know whether you're actually helping al-Qaeda. And these were radical Islamists, and what Obama did in taking out Gaddafi, and yes, I know it was NATO that did it, but I think over 60% of their military is U.S., we were the ones really bombing, even though he says we turned it over to NATO, and we took out Gaddafi, and there was no question our administration wanted to get guns to the rebels. And in fact, I have asked Boehner point blank, did you know that the administration was trying to get weapons to the Libyans and then from Libya to Syria? And he refused to answer the question.
So, well, I was going to ask you about that. Is that why the Republicans were dragging their feet for such a long time to impanel the select committee to look into Benghazi?
Yeah. It took 2.5 years to get him to agree to a select committee. And even then, he had, Trey may not admit, but he had hamstrung the committee. They couldn't go to court and demand what Judicial Watch was getting. And I told Boehner in front of all these other Republican members of the House, if you tell me that you knew about the effort to get weapons, the U.S. to get weapons into the Libyans and weapons from Libya to Syria, I'll never bring it up again, and I'll just assume you're trying to help our party. And he said, we can get into Benghazi without getting into this other stuff you're talking about. And I said, I'm asking you a direct question. Did you know before 9/11 of 2012 that we had tried to get weapons to the Libyans and weapons from Libyans to the Syrians? And he said, and I have answered that question. We can talk about this without getting into any of that stuff you're talking about. And I said, well, that's the most non-denial I've heard since Watergate. And he said, well, you've got an answer to your question. And Tony, I did have an answer. He knew about it. Obama knew about it. And, I'd heard from intelligence officials that said, the guy that was, they arrested over there, Ahmad Abu Qatala, they arrested him in, couple years or so after Benghazi happened, and our intelligence people told me they knew where he had been for a year. It was just the Obama administration felt like they had to have a show. They arrest him. They put him on a slow boat to New York. He comes in and enters a not guilty plea, and some of the former intelligence officials told me they don't expect that guy will ever be able to go to court because they can't afford to have him come in and talk about the fact that he was working with U.S. entities in supplying the Libyan rebels. So they're saying don't. And I know in May, I think the administration announced they're not going to seek the death penalty for Katala, but and some people, why not go after the death penalty since he orchestrated the help plan and was there for the attack? I'm waiting to see if they actually bring him to trial and let him talk. They kept him incommunicado.
We're almost out of time here, Lou, but the issue of why Hillary was trying to cover this up, if in fact Republicans with oversight in Congress knew about this, then there shouldn't be any problem with this information coming out. There's got to be more to it than that.
Well, there is a lot more to it than that, and Hillary was in it up to her eyeballs. She was Secretary of State. None of this happens if it was not her idea or her strongly behind it. So, yeah, she's in it up to her eyeballs. She does not want this pursued, and that's why you haven't had a trial of Katala before now, and it's also why that Tarek, they're not pursuing that through charges. They don't want this guy to come in and talk about his contacts with the State Department. From what our intelligence people told me, yes, of course, there were all kinds of State Department ties with him, and he understood that they gave him permission to do this. He initially said he made a proposal to the State Department to buy the weapons and send them to the rebels. They said, no, that's too direct. If you do it through Qatar, then we can go along with that.
And all right, Louie, we got to leave it.
He had their permission.
Got to leave it there. Congressman Louie Gohmert, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to talk with you.
To find out more about anything you've heard on today's program, go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.